I think we should all feel a great sense of sympathy with poor old Peter, dopey Peter, who's always seemed to be missing the point, where he rebukes, and the Greek is very strong. I mean, it's like you would talk to a little bitty kid, you know, don't do that. He rebukes Jesus and said, you're not going to do that. And the issue, of course, as Mark and the other evangelists set it up, is the issue of the cross. So Peter and these other guys, presumably, we don't know what historically was going on, but certainly very early on, people came to see Jesus as the messianic figure, as the Messiah. Who was the Messiah? The Messiah was, it just means anointed. Christ is the Greek form, Messiah the Hebrew form. Now the word anointed, and it comes from the whole business of David as king. David was the Messiah because he was anointed. It doesn't have anything to do with cross, suffering, blah, blah, blah. And so Peter is not to be complained about too bitterly when he misses a point. Because the Messiah was always supposed to be a victorious figure in Jewish history. The Messiah always won, led everybody to victory. As I said, I think we should feel a great sense of sympathy with Peter, because when I look at the history of the church, for example, I just had the horrific experience of watching the second season of that extraordinary film series called The Borgias, which I recommend to you if you've not seen it. It will curl your hair and your toes and everything else. It seems to me, in the long history of the church, there are two things that absolutely are central to the gospel that we keep missing. One is poverty. Jesus talked about poverty all the time. He doesn't talk about sex at all, so far as we know. But he insists on poverty and the primacy of the poor. And please note, not as an object of our pity, because that, again, is a hierarchical arrangement. I mean, if I am the pitier and they are the pitiee, then it means that I am in some kind of superior position. No. It is the recognition of the poor as my co-humans, as my fully co-human partners on this planet, which is a whole different thing than pity. And then there is the cross, which I think, I mean, if you read Paul, the cross is at the center of Paul's consciousness. I preach Christ and crucified with Christ. I'm nailed to the cross of the world, etc. I want to know nothing among you except the power of Christ crucified. Paul is transfixed by the centrality of the cross. And I think that, along with poverty, is one of the things we've messed up substantially. So what is the cross for us? Well, it's all over the place. It's on top of churches. Probably the most egregious misrepresentation of the cross is the so-called pectoral crosses that bishops and cardinals wear, the big gold jobbers with lots of jewels on. Except mercifully, some bishops have stopped doing that. And now we're a simple wooden cross. Well, what's wrong? The cross is not supposed to be an ornament, for God's sake. And the symbol system of having a cross with jewels and made out of gold seems to me an absolutely counter symbol to what the cross is supposed to be about. I mean, I suggested last week, which we had the Feast of the Exaltation of the Cross, that we ought to revive it by somehow showing gallows or the guillotine or the electric chair, because that's the symbolism that would work, because that's what the cross is. And we somehow have domesticated the cross, I think, like the bishops and their ruby-encrusted, or the kind of ornamental existence that the cross has in our lives. And yet for Paul, it was at the center of his self-consciousness. It was not some kind of trivial thing like losing your car keys, well, that's my cross. Getting pancreatic cancer, well, that's my cross. None of those things are my cross. Because everybody loses their car key. And all kinds of people get pancreatic cancer. And that's not the cross. So what is the cross? Well, we're fortunate in the two readings today, the two earlier ones, to have some kind of filling out, if you will, of what the cross is about. So we've been pounded by Jane for the last three Sundays, if you remember. This is true religion, to take care of the non-persons in your midst, widows and orphans. To acknowledge their reality, to establish their place within the community, and not simply to ignore them. Or as we have it today, to do the works of the Lord. And the works of the Lord are not making these terrible divisions of people between the rich and the poor, which was what James was talking about last Sunday. You know, some guy comes in well-dressed and he's, oh! Some poor bum comes in, oh! So the cross is supposed to be our recognition of the co-humanity of every, especially the most unlikely, especially the most unprepossessing. And of course, you may recognize this first reading from Isaiah that Gil did, that's from Holy Week. That's one of the four so-called servant songs that are read during Holy Week about the servant of God who suffers unjustly. And the cross here takes the form of nonviolent acceptance of injustice. I gave my beard, my cheeks to be struck, did not hide my face. Because to the extent that we do enact the cross, embody the cross in our own lives, is going to invite that. It's going to invite that kind of vicious response. Because it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. As Paul will say over and over, it's foolishness. It's foolishness. So, and Jane fills it out more. You know, this is very nice. And, you know, some poor guy comes up without food or clothes. Oh, well, I hope you do all right. Hope you do all right. Just, you know, okay, that's good. No, the cross is that place in us where the contestation between my normal egocentricity, my normal self-serving, self-protecting better, has to give way to a free response to those around me who are minimized in their humanity in one way or another. That's not easy. That's not easy. And that's the cross. The great Carol Houselander, a wonderful English lady who wrote some splendid books in the 20th century, said, nobody is safe who is not constantly at war with themselves. And she had her hand right on the issue. Because I constantly want to fill up any spaces in my life with further examples of my own appetites, my own desires, my own self-promotion. And then, if I'm ignored, then to strike back. Paul will again say, don't be overcome by evil, but overcome by evil by good. And he meant in that, this is precisely this business of non-retaliation when I do suffer. And then the other thing that I think makes the cross really have a bad rep in the church is that when I was growing up, both in high school and in the seminary, the cross was anything that made you miserable. Above all, obedience. Obedience, you know, obey. You give up your will, you know. You empty yourself and supply the will of the superior to your own self-understanding. And that's the cross. That's not the cross. That's not the cross. It's a power play on the part of superiors, whether they're the Pope or Sister Superior or my dad or whoever, the bishops. No, the cross is the most intimate and personal thing they're supposed to be about me. It's not for me. I fully admit it. I don't do this. But that's why I need to be jarred over and over and over again by this seeming desolate image of the cross and Paul and all the gospel. And this is where the church, I think, has failed most miserably. Because it's not just giving up. It's not just giving up. exempting yourself of your old life, filled as it is with cowardice and fear and self-seeking, to make room for a new self. And it's the transition point between the death of the old self, which we know only too well, and the birth of a new self, which we don't know. So it's encumbered with the fear of the unknown. What will it be like if I don't protect myself at all costs, you know? Well, and then again, as always, I think we have to apply this to the public life of the church. What do we talk about? What do we manifest? What do we symbolize to the world? I mean, if you listen to Cardinal Dolan's speech at the end of the Democratic Convention, it's pro-life! It's religious liberty! And with the Republicans, he just kind of canonized Paul Ryan and the great Republican agenda. Something desperately wrong with that when the highest churchman in the United States could do that kind of stuff. And be approved and have it even say, well, this is business as usual. Well, it should not be. Neither for us as individuals or for us as an institution. But again, the cross is supposed to be the great aperture in which the hope of our transformed selves becomes clearer and stronger and firmer. And our readiness to exist in darkness, the womb, the darkness of the womb in which this new self is to, from which this new self is to emerge. That's the cross too.